Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda, back from the Four Nations Faceoff break. And Randeep, In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
That's right. Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more at Bells and Whistles with happy hour pints for $6.75, 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood.
And I mentioned it, the Four Nations face-off is now finished. The victorious Team Canada picking up the overtime win over the United States on Thursday night. And there's been plenty of Canucks news that we're going to get into over the course of the show as they get set to resume their schedule Saturday night against the Vegas Golden Knights. But Randeep, we have to talk about the Four Nations face-off and what ultimately turned out to be an incredibly successful event for the National Hockey League, with more than 9 million people watching that game on Thursday south of the border, close to 7 million people in Canada tuning in as well. And with the lack of sporting news elsewhere, especially in North America, and I know things were going on in Europe that you were paying close attention to, and we'll get to that in the mailbag coming up in a few moments here on the show, but this took center stage on both sides of the border, and that's a big win for the NHL.
And listen, Batch, we and hockey fans have ripped the NHL for various things over the years, but they got this so right. The timing of this tournament was perfect. It was a mid-season classic, but with passion, with energy. You could see that the players were starving for international hockey. The best players on the planet throwing hits, sacrificing, fights, you name it. Not only did they make hockey fans proud, I think they also showed other sports, this is how you do, you know, international tournaments. This is how you do mid-season classics. The same day that this tournament was being played, the NBA All-Star game was going on. That was, you know, we'd say glorified shinny. That was nowhere near any sort of passion whatsoever at the NBA All-Star game. So to me, I think not only did hockey benefit fans, but the NHL knocked this one out of the park. The buzz was unbelievable. And more than anything, this was the perfect appetizer for the Olympics next season. It got the players going, it got the fans going, and it got casual hockey fans going as well.
Yeah, it certainly did. From a Canucks perspective, though, there was plenty of news during the Four Nations faceoff break, so we're going to talk about that. They extended Kevin Lankinen, they extended Drew O'Connor, and Thatcher Demko has been ruled out week to week and is not going to play on the upcoming five-game road trip. Quinn Hughes' status still up in the air, at least at the time of recording here, Randeep, on Friday afternoon. So let's start with the two extensions quickly, and we're going to talk more about Lankinen and his deal and how it ties into Thatcher Demko in the mailbag. But they lock up Drew O'Connor after acquiring him from the Penguins, a two-year extension. They lock up Kevin Lankinen to a five-year extension and take away some of the uncertainty around a couple of guys that were going to be pending free agents.
That's right, and we'll talk about the Lankinen deal in, you know, kind of full extent a little bit later on. But the Drew O'Connor extension, $2.5 million AAV, 2 years, $5 million total. Got a 12-team no-trade clause for both years, and signed 3 weeks after getting traded from Pittsburgh, playing four games. What I like about this player is his size, his speed, and his forecheck. We saw that after four games. He plays fast, and more importantly, he hangs onto the puck. He's not afraid to carry the puck, which is something that this management team and the coaching staff has wanted from their players. So, you know, the simple question, anytime you sign a bottom six forward to a contract, you think and you ask the question, can he outperform this contract? Can he meet that standard? And for a guy that's career high is 33 points, 16 goals, I think there's more in Drew O'Connor's game. It might not be that much more. He might be, you know, around that 16, 17 goal range over a full season. But I think he's a spark plug in this lineup, similar to a Connor Garland, similar to a Kiefer Sherwood. You need one of those guys, it feels like, on every single line. So he's going to be able to give you some sort of raw production, I believe. We've seen him already, 2 goals in 4 games with Vancouver. But I think he's going to be able to outperform his contract. $2.5 million with the cap going up, that's not very much money.
Yeah, now on the injury front, Quinn Hughes trending in the right direction, didn't play in the Four Nations faceoff, ultimately didn't go and join Team USA ahead of the final, and went from the Canucks' first practice wearing a non-contact jersey to being in a full contact jersey, and we'll see where things go from here. But that has to be very good news with all the uncertainty that there was going into the break about, was he going to go and play in that tournament? Was he going to push it? And ultimately, as Hughes said earlier this week, you know, he didn't want to be crawling back to Vancouver battling an injury and be unable to play for a very important stretch of games for the Canucks coming out of that break. You know, now, as I said already at the time of recording, it remains to be seen how soon he's going to get back into the lineup. But the fact that he's trending in that direction, has practiced with the team, looks like he's going to be good to go sooner rather than later, has to be a huge sigh of relief and a huge breath of fresh air for Canuck fans for what is going to be a very important stretch run with 27 games left in the season.
Yeah, ultimately, you feel for the person and player, Quinn Hughes, because you know he wanted to rep his country, but this is the right call. And the fact that he didn't make the trip out there, he didn't do the extra travel unnecessarily, is going to benefit him and the Vancouver Canucks. And Batch, you know, it's a tough thing to say, but it's moments like this. When you're the captain, you have to think of your team first. You think your country, of course, but you also understand that, you know, at 59 points, 24 more points than any other Canuck, you are extremely valuable to your team. And you going on, even making the cross-country trip out there, it's going to give you a 5-hour flight where your body's going back and forth. You're not getting practice time with your team. It was the right call, and I think this was a very captainly move by Quinn Hughes. I'm sure it wasn't an easy one, but to have him back in the lineup potentially, to at the very least have him back training with his team and getting him comfortable is going to be a huge win for this team, because there are some other injuries that they're dealing with, but having your most important player, having your MVP, I wouldn't say 100% right, because we don't know his actual status, but closer to 100% than he was a couple of weeks ago is going to be massive, because we know when he is near 100%, 80%, 90%, whatever, he's a difference maker. And they need that Quinn Hughes down the stretch.
And the other injuries you allude to, most notably Thatcher Demko, who's not going to play on this 5-game road trip at all and has been listed week to week by the organization, which is really difficult news, especially when the initial talk coming out of the final game against the Maple Leafs before the break was that it might not be that serious. We know it's not the knee. Rick Tocchet said that at the time, but the fact that Thatcher Demko is going to miss, you know, at the very least a week here, if he's not going to play on this trip, and potentially more, you know, again, highlights the importance of Kevin Lankinen, which, you know, they've extended him. We'll talk about the contract coming up after the break. But, you know, another tough blow for Thatcher Demko and another tough bounce for the Canucks and the situation in their crease.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is an individual that's worked so hard to get back at the NHL level from, you know, his injury, and to have another situation where he's going to be missing time. And you mentioned the 5-game road trip. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough for Kevin Lankinen, because this is a guy that didn't get time off. He played 2 games with Finland. Now he's going to come back. Vancouver's got a game against Vegas on Saturday. Then they've got Utah on Sunday. And then they've got LA on Wednesday, Anaheim on Thursday. You got 2 back-to-backs that are coming up this week. So it's going to be difficult for Lankinen. How many of these games does he play? And do you potentially see an Artur Shelov's appearance as well? I think you'd have to see at least 1 to 2. So, you know, it's going to present some challenges for the team. But for Demko, you just got to get right. You know, this is a player that we don't know what's going on with his body. Obviously, I'm not going to try to play doctor here, but we know it's not right. And you feel for the person at a human level, because we know how competitive he is, how much he demands of himself. And this has got to be absolutely killing him, the fact that he's got to sit out time yet again, 17 appearances this season, but he's left 2 games with injuries. And that's got to take a mental toll too, Batch.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And we'll talk more about Thatcher Demko and his situation, more so over the long term in relation to Lankinen's extension, when we return. And we'll get into the mailbag right here on In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, Randy Janda alongside, as always. We'll get into the mailbag in just a moment, but Randy, as always, we have to remind the listeners that In the Booth is brought to you by Bells and Whistles.
Catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more with Happy Hour Pints for $6.75 at 3296 Fraser Street, just off Kingsway, right in the Fraser Hood, Bells and Whistles.
And also, if you've missed any part of the show listening on the radio, it does live as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. So make sure to subscribe to that. You get the daily show with Sat and Dan every weekday. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick, and you get In the Booth every week with us as well. All right, Randy, let's get into the mailbag here. And the first question comes in from at No Back Checks on Twitter, who writes in and says, what did the fellas do over the break? So I know you were globetrotting here, Randeep, but I got away as well. But I think you probably had the more eventful of our two getaways, so I'll let you go first. What did you spend the Four Nations break doing?
Well, we took two very different approaches to vacation. I'll start with mine. I went to Spain, so I went to Madrid, Cordoba, and Sevilla, Spain, caught a couple of soccer matches, Real Betis versus Real Sociedad, which is kind of the appetizer, and caught some Champions League, Man City versus Real Madrid. So good food, a little bit of jet lag, but some globetrotting, you're right. And it was fun for me. I loved it. And Real Madrid at the Bernabeu was unreal. So a nice little break. I think I'm a little bit more tired than you are, but you also had a great vacation and you played a little bit more relaxed than I did.
Yeah, I just went down to Mexico with the family at an all-inclusive and saw some sun and had a good relaxing time with the kids and my wife and her parents actually came down as well. So that was great because there was some babysitting there that they were able to do. So we had a couple nice dinners without, the kids squawking and making all sorts of noise. So that was really good. Tell me more about the experience at the Real Madrid-Man City match, though, because it was certainly a memorable match to watch. But what about that atmosphere in Madrid, and not just in the stadium, as you allude to, but sort of the lead up and the vibe in the city when there's a big Champions League game night happening?
I think the only thing that we can maybe compare it to is like international tournaments, like probably the Four Nations face-off, where you have a number of fans flooding a city. And early on in the day, whether you're having breakfast or you're going for lunch, you start seeing Real Madrid jerseys, of course, in their hometown, but Man City jerseys popping up all over. I sent out a little, really amateurish video about Man City fans starting to take over the major square in Madrid. But that's just an example of, how it basically takes over an entire city. And the stadium itself, Batch, is it looks like a spaceship. You walk in, the replay screens. For a soccer stadium, it is just so well made. And it's a renovated version of the Bernabeu. It's the, the best soccer stadium I've ever been to. The energy is unreal. The fans were totally on Pep Guardiola. Anytime they showed him on the big screen, of course, his history with Barcelona and Kylian Mbappe and what he was able to do in that match, a coming out party for him at Real Madrid. It was just a fantastic experience in the stadium, but even outside the stadium, the buzz before and after the match was unreal.
Yeah, I can imagine a pretty cool experience. I'm very jealous, actually, because that's something I'd like to do is to get over and see some of those games, some Champions League games and things like that in different countries, in different cities, and get some of that match day atmosphere. So pretty cool that you were able to do that in a couple of different cities in Spain. And now that we've had our break, we've been able to recharge. I might have recharged a little bit more than you based on, everything you were doing over there overseas. But now we get back in and we focus on the Vancouver Canucks. And as we continue with the mailbag, the next question, and we'll go to Reach first because we're on the topic right now. Dan Riccio, our colleague and dear friend, says, is Randeep a Madridista now?
Okay, so if he's asking from soccer fan allegiance, I am not a Real Madrid fan. I loved them beating Man City, so I'm not going to lie there.
Don't worry.
I'm a neutral in most matches, but that one I wanted them to lose Man City. But in terms of the city, if you've never been to Madrid, it is a fantastic city. Awesome food, awesome drinks. So in that regard, I'm maybe more of a Madridista, or Madridista, sorry, however you say it. But when it comes to soccer allegiances, no, I'm still an Arsenal guy. That hasn't changed. I'm not like Richo. I don't switch fan bases.
Yeah, and Juventus had a pretty tough go in the Champions League this past week as well. So I understand why Rich is maybe throwing some shots out there. Our next question, as we get back to the hockey talk, don't worry, we're not going to spend the whole second part of the episode talking about soccer, comes from Woodrow, the eligible bachelor, who writes in and asks, what are your expectations for Elias Pettersson, EP40, to clarify, and we always appreciate someone who distinguishes between the Pettersons. What are the expectations for EP40 with 27 games remaining in the regular season? And, you know, this is an interesting question now because the runway is getting short here in terms of how much time is left for him to salvage something of this season from an individual perspective. The runway is getting shorter in terms of the Canucks' time to make a decision on what they want to do with him before that no-movement clause kicks in on July 1st. And as Woodrow mentions, 27 games left. And this is also coming off the back of a Four Nations face-off performance where he didn't play very well and was moved down the lineup and was not a big factor for Team Sweden. So my expectations remain very high for Elias Pettersson. He's being paid like one of the best players in the league. They've moved JT Miller out of town. He needs to step up and be a go-to guy for them because these games mean a whole lot. They're right in the thick of a battle for a playoff spot, and they are going to need Elias Pettersson to be at his best if they want to have success and win down the stretch and ultimately get into the playoffs and then try to accomplish something once they get into the playoffs. So, where my expectations sit and what a realistic level of expectation might be could be two different parts of the conversation, Randeep. But for me, I think you have to keep a very high bar for this player just based on the cap hit and the contract and what we've seen him do in the past.
My expectation for Elias Pettersson is the same as when JT Miller got traded. If you are the top dog on this team, you need to provide production. And that's the key word. Every time we talk about his defensive play, I feel like it's a backhanded compliment now, especially since JT Miller got traded. With Miller, you could make the argument to say, hey, play a good 200-foot game, don't be a liability, and win your matchups, or at the very least play a solid two-way game, and JT will break up the offense. Well, that's not going to happen now. Now, you're the top dog, and Filip Hedl's doing a good job, but you need to see production from Elias Pettersson. So the expectation, Batch, if it's 27 games left and he plays all 27 games, I want to see him as a point-per-game player. This is simply coming down to start producing. And he's projected to have 51 points over 73 games played this season, which I don't need to tell you is not good enough for a player that's paid top five in the NHL. He's coming back from a Four Nations faceoff where I think most folks that were glass half full were thinking, hey, this could be where he gets his groove back. This is where Rick Tocchet himself wanted him to have fun, try stuff on the ice, I think be a little bit more creative. We didn't see that. And he even got benched in the third period against the Team USA game, played a total of sub 10 minutes. So the rest of the way, I think the pressure is going to be high, just like it was when Miller got traded. This team is going to be playing meaningful games. Currently in a playoff spot, you need production from your top player. So that's the expectation for me.
Yeah, and ultimately it's going to be interesting to see, not just with Pettersson, who, you know, as far as we know, is off the market right now, but, you know, I alluded to the fact they've got a decision to make. You could argue they have to make it before July 1st when that no-move clause kicks in, although that's not necessarily the case. You just need his cooperation if you want to make a trade after that. But we'll get into some of these other topics. The Besser situation, are you going to try and add to help this group make the playoffs? What do you do with Pettersson? These are all big questions that have to be answered in the next couple of weeks here before the deadline. So it would help Pettersson's case both in the short term and the long term for his time as a Vancouver Canuck if he can get back to playing well. That may be easier said than done, though, because we've played more than half of the season and it hasn't happened yet. But he is going to be relied upon to perform at a very high level. And, you know, I agree with what you said about the backhanded compliment talking about his defensive play. I also think, talking about him being a point-per-game player, like, that's lowering the bar, too, based on what this guy has accomplished in his career. And I understand
for
that
sure.
If he were a point-per-game player down the stretch, that would be a massive success compared to what he's done to this point this year. But this is what frustrates me about the discourse around Pettersson, and quite frankly, why I'm very tired of talking about this player, as we have all season long, is there's so much, oh, but look at the great defensive play he made, or, oh, you know, he had seven shots in this game, or whatever it might be. You're paying the guy $11.6 million. Seven shots and a good defensive play doesn't cut it when you've essentially made him your franchise centerman, number one centerman.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, the point per game aspect. Prior to this year, he was over a point per game. And now in his career, he's, you know, sub point per game. So getting back to that level, I think, is priority number one. But you're right. You know, we're talking about a 102-point player in 2022-2023 when he played 80 games. He is well above a point per game player in his, you start looking at two of the last three seasons, he's been able to do that. So, yes, that is the original bar. I think we've had to already lower it. And a point per game for me is the starting point. But you're right. This is an individual that has had a fall from grace. But there's going to be more pressure here, Batch. And here is the thing. You need him to play confident. You need him to pick up production. And for me, it's by any means necessary. I think the rest of the way here, you need that bottom line production is first and foremost a priority here. We know he's not skating as fast. The stats back that up. We know he's not able to hit that top gear like he was a couple of seasons ago, but there are still moments on the power play when it's 5-on-4 that he can create, and we're not simply seeing that assertiveness. So yes, I want to see him moving his feet. I want to see that burst at some point, but there's so many other things he's lacking right now that if he were to make improvements there or find confidence in his game along the right half wall on the power play and just be more decisive, Batch, there's points there. So that's step one. It's not the overall picture. Of course, I agree with you. But let's start with just getting raw production.
And we switch now from speaking about Elias Pettersson to discussing Thatcher Demko, because we got numerous questions in about Demko, and as I alluded to earlier in the show, within the context of the Kevin Lankinen extension. Justin in East Van says, what is Thatcher Demko's future with the Canucks? At CSWC Andy says, how does Lankinen's contract impact the Demko situation, if at all? Mike on Twitter says, is Demko gone before next season? And my initial reaction to this is that the Lankinen extension could impact Demko's future as a member of the Vancouver Canucks, but it won't necessarily. And what I go back to is, I believe it was Jim Rutherford who was quoted as saying, you know, a little while ago that they might have to prioritize spending more money in the crease to solidify things because of the uncertainty around Demko with his health. And obviously he's sidelined with another injury right now. You know, in terms of the dollar amount, this deal for Lankinen made a lot of sense. The term may be a little bit longer than you would have liked for a guy that's going to be your backup goaltender, but I think it's pretty clear that they see Lankinen as a 1B more so than a number two. And what happens with Thatcher Demko is going to be largely decided by how he responds from this injury, how he plays down the stretch, potentially how he plays early next season, what sort of money he might be in line to make with the salary cap going up. Like, there's so many moving parts here. It's like, if Demko's healthy, and if he plays well, if he's healthy, and, you know, if they want to re-sign him, if he plays well and he's healthy. Like, we're stacking hypotheticals on hypotheticals here. It's very hard to analyze from just a clear perspective at this point because there's so much uncertainty around Demko. So I could see it going one way where Demko gets healthy, he plays well, he gets an extension, and you've got a 1A, 1B situation with two guys that you trust for years to come. The other side of things is locking up Lankinen does give the Canucks the flexibility to say, we don't want to spend big money on a guy that hasn't been able to stay healthy to this point in his career.
Yeah, a couple of things on this front. I think with Kevin Lankinen, it's important to acknowledge that he's got two things working in his favor. One is leverage. This is a goaltending situation. If you look at the NHL level, there's uncertainty with Thatcher Demko, which you alluded to and you talked about. But also, with Artur Shelov and Nikita Tolopilo, we're not necessarily seeing the next goalie be ready for the NHL level. So that helps in terms of leverage. When you talk about getting a little bit more term, that can certainly push a team to say, all right, we don't want to go 5 years, but we don't have that many options either. Our starter in the NHL is hurt, and our young guys aren't developing to the same rate maybe we thought they were last year. The other thing is the cap going up, and that $4.5 million, I know there's a lot of people having some colorful opinions on saying this is way too much money long-term, $22 million, but the going rate now compared to what it was 4 or 5 months ago has changed. Once the NHL acknowledged that the cap was going up, the salary for a fringe starter, a 1B starter, batch is shot up. And, you know, that's a credit to Kevin Lankin and his team waiting for the right time to strike this deal. But if you start looking at some of the deals that were signed earlier, I look at the Joey DeCordon contract, similar games played. I think Lankinen's played more. He's obviously older. Some would say, you know, Joey DeCord's a better goaltender. I would argue that, you know, they're probably in that same tier, but whatever it may be, he's getting 5+, and that's a team that needed a starter with Philip Grubauer going, really, his career tanking. So Seattle was happy to pay that, but that's in that same ballpark where if you're Kevin Lankinen and saying, hey, that guy's making that much money, he's younger, he's maybe, you know, he's getting a little, maybe a little overpaid based on the market, I can get 4.5. So I think this deal for Vancouver, it's one you need based on the lack of options you have in the organization. And one important thing to consider here is if you were to hit the free market looking for a 1B starter, it's probably going to cost you the same. This is the going rate, right? Go back to the Jack Campbell deals and some of the other ones I just rattled off here, even going back to Jonas Korpisalo a couple of years ago with Ottawa, who was at $4 million. That's the going rate. If you're a 1B starter, you're going to have to pay upwards around, I would say, 16 to 20, maybe 22 in this case, million dollars if you're going to try to sign a guy in free agency or hold on to him.
Well, yeah, and I think the point about the cap going up is well made, because very soon we're going to realize that $4.5 million is like the new $2 million in terms of where salaries are going to go, what guys are going to be paid, how much players' earning potential and ability is going to shoot through the roof. So, you know, I guess it'll remain to be seen what happens with Demko's side of things in this equation. But the number makes sense for Lankinen. And, you know, as we look at the Demko side of things, for him, it's all about health. You know, there is also a possibility here where the Canucks might actually get a bargain on Thatcher Demko to keep him if he has more injury issues. And again, we're just working on hypotheticals here. It's very possible, and I think we all hope, as people that follow this team, that Thatcher Demko gets back and healthy and reaches the top of his game, because we understand that that represents the Canucks' best chance to win. But there are so many potential paths you could go down with the Demko side of things that I think you needed to have that insurance policy of a guy that can be your starter, but maybe doesn't have to be. But if you have to turn to him, if things go sideways with Demko, you feel comfortable doing it. And Kevin Lankinen, full credit to him, has come in and filled that exact role. But from the Demko side of things, I think there's so much uncertainty that it makes it so hard to project. And, you know, one of the questions from Mike was, is Demko gone before next season? I could see it going either way. It depends on his health. It depends on, you know, what other teams value him at. Like if the Canucks feel like they can make a trade and get a nice return and not have that uncertainty going forward, is there a possibility they make that deal? I think there certainly is, but I also don't think it's likely, because I don't know how many people are going to line up and want to pay, you know, premium level assets for a goaltender whose health is questionable at best right now.
Well, I think, you know, one area that is unfortunate, and you feel for Thatcher Demko, because another injury in the lead up to the Four Nations faceoff, we remember the Toronto game where he had to come into the game. You feel for him because not only, A, as a player, you want to be out there, you want to be earning your money, but the more he gets injured, that next contract is taking a hit, right? The bottom line for a goaltender that is top two in the NHL last year in Vezina voting is it's going to hurt you, even if it's a little bit, when it comes to your next contract. And we'll have to wait and see. There's obviously still some runway here for Thatcher to get back on track with the Vancouver Canucks, or maybe for with another team, as alluding to the question we got on Twitter. But I think with the Canucks, one thing you need to have is, if Kevin Lankinen is going to be your 1B starter, you need to make sure that whoever you have next to him is also giving you some availability, right? And with Thatcher Demko, that's the biggest concern right now. If he is not confident in his body, or if you're as an organization are not confident that he can give you games, we're not talking about, you know, 10 years ago or 2008-09 where Roberto Luongo, what, played 72 games. We're talking about a league now where you're probably going to try to get 40 games, 45 games for your lead starter, maybe 50, but that's about it. You're not going further than that, especially with a 1A, 1B situation. So I think the assessment here, Batch, has to be over the next few months, what can you get from Thatcher Demko? What kind of availability does he have, short-term and long-term? And you have to make your decision based on that. And, you know, that's it sucks to say that, because Thatcher's been so good in Vancouver when he's been healthy, but it's when he's been healthy, that's the key. And that's the unfortunate part here. You need somebody alongside Lankinen that you can rely on, because Lankinen is not a workhorse. You're going to need a Boston-style Allmark Swayman type of scenario, maybe a poor man's version of that, but you're going to need availability from both goaltenders moving forward.
Yeah, and another question on this topic comes in from Ryan, who's the co-host of a great local hockey podcast, Pucks on Net, that we recommend you all listen to. He says, do you see a scenario where the Canucks keep $9.5 million in goalie salary on the books next season, which is a less direct way of asking if they're going to trade Demko? But my answer to that is, yeah, I do see a scenario where they do that, because $9.5 million with the cap going up is not as much money as it once was. So, you know, ideally, do you want to be spending that much, or that percentage of the cap, maybe we should be referring to it more specifically as, on goaltending? Yeah, probably not. But that's what you need to do at this point in time with the insurance policy that you require because of Demko's injury. So, you know, I let's put it this way. I don't think that this contract means that the Canucks are going to rush into a Thatcher Demko trade. And, you know, does that mean they for sure won't trade him? No. Does that mean they for sure will trade him? Also, no. But we've heard hockey operations already talk about how they might have to commit more money in the crease than they would have previously liked to or been comfortable with. And I think the Lankinen extension, that's the only thing I can read into it immediately, is, okay, they are willing to commit more money to the crease to make sure things are stable because of the instability around Thatcher Demko's status. But I think reading beyond that to say that this for sure means Demko is being traded, or for sure means he's being extended, is not the appropriate way to look at this situation, at least at the moment anyway.
And when you start looking at the cap situation, when it goes up next year to $95.5 million, that's going to be less than 10% of the cap hit on two goaltenders. So we're talking about $9 million for two goaltenders. Let's go back to last year when the Florida Panthers, who won the Stanley Cup, were committing $14 million to their goaltenders in a cap situation that was very different from 95.5. Of course, that requires, you know, the rest of your team building to be near perfect. But my point is, though, in the big scheme of things, this is going to be a pretty low cap commitment if they do come back with Thatcher Demko as one of their goaltenders. Now, Batch, looking at that, though, for the folks that are saying with Demko, is he still on this team next year? The selling point, if you believe in him and his ceiling to be consistent, you have to make sure that you bring him back, because he has got the highest ceiling of any goaltender in the organization. Some would argue the Pacific Division. But if your assessment is that you're not going to get that Thatcher Demko back, or you feel as though, you know, his best is well past him, I think you have to consider it, because with 1 year left, there's still some value out there for Thatcher Demko. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, a Corey Schneider for a first-round pick type of value. No, that's not going to happen. But there's going to be teams that will want a one-year flyer on a player that maybe might lead to a contract extension. So you're not going to necessarily it's not an anchor of a contract. You might get a pick out of it. You know, not a great pick, but still, you might be able to make this move. It just really matters on the assessment the organization has with Thatcher Demko and with his injury history of, do you believe in him to bounce back, or do you essentially say, now might be the time to sell?
And we go from the uncertainty around one player in Thatcher Demko to the uncertainty around another player in Brock Besser. And again, we got multiple questions on Brock Besser. So let's start with @CanuckGirl43, who writes in and says, what does this, and I assume by this she's referencing the Lankinen extension, what does this mean for Besser's contract? Feels like his chances of being a Canucks next year are slowly decreasing. He's running out of time to make his case for staying, or has it run out? And Brian, with a similar question, what do you guys think the Besser extension could look like if we got one at all? Could he be traded? And based on the lack of noise around this situation, I'll be perfectly honest. At this point, my expectation is that Brock Besser will not be a Vancouver Canuck next season. Now, the question is going to be, will they move him before the deadline and get a return? Or do they keep him as like an own rental situation and risk losing him in free agency for nothing? I think that to me is where the question lies with Besser. But even before JT Miller was traded, I was on 3 weeks ago, maybe, with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz on Canucks Talk. And Drantz asked me what I thought the most likely thing to happen was in terms of player movement before the end of the season. And at that time, I said Brock Besser being traded. And I think that's still my answer, whether you're talking about Demko's future like we have or Pedersen's situation. I think things are trending towards a Brock Besser trade here. Now, you know, is that guaranteed? No, it's not. We've seen this organization move quickly to extend guys with very little noise around those situations. They did that with JT Miller when they signed him to the contract extension. We didn't hear a whole lot about the Kevin Lankinen contract before that was finalized. So there is still time. They could still extend Besser. But anyway, right now, all the indicators are pointing towards him not being a Canuck next year. And to me, the question is more about whether they move him before the deadline or not.
Well, you know, when you mentioned about the comment that Patrick Alvin made about you could maybe even treat him as your own rental, I would think, in my opinion, and this is me speaking here, I think that would be the wrong decision. I don't think you can treat him as your own rental. Either you find a deal that works for you, and I think the assessment has to be as a 25 to 30 goal guy. That's going to imply a raise. He's at 6.65 right now. With the cap going up, similar to the Lankinen conversation, what is that new price? What is a raise for Brock Besser when it comes to, of course, he scored 40 goals, but we've seen him get back down to that 25 to 30 goal range, right? He's on pace for 52 points and 27 goals currently. So what's that assessment? Is it $8 million? Is it $8.5 million? Is it $8.75 million? And does that work for the Vancouver Canucks?
I think now, it starts with an eight for sure. I think that's sure. Like to the part of those questions about what the cap hit would be or what the contract would look like. You know, you're looking at a long-term deal, so 7 or 8 years probably, and you're looking at least $8 million per season. So, you know, north of $60 million is what we're talking about here pretty much in terms of how much you'd have to be committing to Brock Besser on this deal if you want to keep him. And the number could be even higher than that because of everything we know about the salary cap.
And now the flip side of that is if you can't sign him, I think you have to make a deal. And to me, I think fit really matters here. If we start looking at some of the players that the Canucks have targeted, of course, I think Brock Besser has turned into a Rick Tocchet-style player. Committed two-way game. He's a wall guy. He gets to the middle of the ice. We saw that last year especially where he was not only scoring goals in tight but providing screens. But here's the problem, Batch. He lacks speed, and he's always lacked that speed. Although he's made improvements in his game, he's never going to be that straight-line burner that we know the management team likes to have. We know that Rick Tocchet likes to have those types of players as well. With Brock Besser, of course, he's got the scoring touch, but how is a long-term contract going to age with this profile of player? Now, if you flip him for assets, it gives you a couple options, which you can help you grow in the short term. You can flip whatever asset you get and try to get an impact forward in their 20s and maybe try to kind of retool on the fly while you're fighting for a playoff spot. or you use those picks later on. I don't think you're going to get much more than picks, if I'm being completely honest, but I think that is the fork in the road. Either you sign that deal, or you try to flip him for assets so you can get a younger forward, younger winger, potentially, to make an impact in this lineup. I don't think you can treat him as your own rental.
Yeah, I agree. And the one thing we can say, because we've seen this management group do it twice, both with Filip Hronek and with Marcus Pedersen, is just because you get picks or future assets back doesn't mean that you couldn't then turn around and spend those future assets in a subsequent trade. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if prior to the deadline, we see them move Besser, but then turn around immediately and use the assets they get for Besser to go and find a replacement that makes more sense for this team, you know, more so in the long term, maybe, than the short term. And another question here from Kevin, who writes in on Twitter and asks, why do the Canucks and fan base not value Besser like the rest of the league? Top 95 percentile in shot speed, shot percentage, 90th percentile on shots taken. Compare Besser with Pedersen and the wrong guy got the contract. And Besser's top speed is higher than Pedersen's. And I think this is applying to this season. And ultimately, I think the answer to this question lies in positional need. Centermen are more important for a hockey team's success. And when they locked up Elias Pedersen to that deal, he was performing like a top-level centerman in the NHL. Obviously, since then, things haven't gone that well, and the comment about the wrong guy got the contract, I can certainly understand why Kevin would think that way. But the answer to this lies in how replaceable these guys are. If you move on from Elias Pedersen, regardless of all of the conversations we've had about how much he's struggled this year, he is going to be very difficult to replace. Brock Besser, you know, I understand he's a very good player, 30-plus goal scorer, 40-plus goal scorer at the peak of his potential, but you can find scoring wingers in free agency. You can find them on the trade market. You can't find guys that could be franchise-level centermen very easily. Those players are hard to acquire. Generally speaking, you have to draft and develop them yourself, and that is why the Canucks have been so hesitant to move on from a guy like Pedersen, or have thought very carefully about that decision before they may ultimately end up making it, whereas the Besser decision doesn't seem to be causing them to lose as much sleep, for lack of a better way to describe it, because you can go and find another Brock Besser or a much more adequate replacement much more easily than you could trying to replace a guy like Elias Pedersen.
And he's a heck of a player. Don't get me wrong. I think any time that, you know, we've been lucky enough to cover Brock Besser in the NHL since we started at Sportsnet 650, go back to the 2016-2017 season. And since then, we've covered his entire career rather closely. But I think him last year and putting up those 40 goals, those 73 points, you have to look at his offense being tied to JT Miller as well. JT Miller was one of the elite setup men in the NHL last year. He was fourth in primary assists, a lot of those going to Brock Besser. When you have a player playing at that level next to you, they were a tandem. There is going to be an impact. So I'm not saying he put up those points solely because of JT Miller, because that would be false, and that I don't think is very respectful to Brock Besser, but there is no doubt an impact of they were a good duo. Now, if you don't have that player down the middle with Brock Besser, Batch, what is that production looking like? And how can you commit to a long-term deal without having a rock-solid 1-2 punch on your in your duos? And with Elias Pedersen, I think they're still trying to find out if that's going to be, you know, is that Brock's home permanently? Is there another centerman that he jives with a little bit better with Filip Hedl, which is something that we've started to see as well. But, you know, we're talking about short term here. We're not talking about long term. When you're committing near $60 million to a player, you want to have confidence that they're able to drive their own offense and get their own shot off with whether he's playing with Pedersen and Hedl. And I think with JT, there was a real connection there. This is an interesting time for Brock Besser, because in order to commit that money, you better be damn sure that you know that this guy can create his own offense and it's not tied to a centerman. So I think that's why it's a really, really interesting conversation with Besser right now. And the timing for me, honestly, I think it's a very difficult time to have that conversation, because there's still some big questions that need to be answered regarding Brock when you're about to sign that check.
Yeah, and also, this is a guy that is turning 28 years old within a week from now. So if you're talking about 7 or 8 years, you're talking about committing to this guy till he's 35 or 36, and we already have questions about his speed. And I know Kevin pointed out that, you know, Besser's top speed has capped out higher than Pettersson's this year. I think that's more a reflection of how much Pettersson has struggled than Besser being a burner or anything like that. But, you know, I do worry about how Besser's game will age, not in the next 3 or 4 seasons, but in the 3 or 4 seasons beyond that. And this was something that the Canucks were criticized for when they extended JT Miller, and now that's not really going to be an issue for them, was, you know, how late into his 30s he was going to get making big money, and how, you know, that contract might age really poorly. You have to ask some of those same questions about Brock Besser, even though he's going to be 28 this coming week. Because if you're committing long-term to him, then those are things that you have to take into account when looking at this team and how you want to try and have success and ultimately win a Stanley Cup, and when their competitive window might be, because I think the goalposts have kind of moved on the answer to that question because of the JT Miller trade in particular.
Yeah, and you know, it goes back to, in a cap world, you have to make these very difficult decisions, and it may sound like we're getting ready for a Brock Besser trade, and the reality of that is, and I agree with you, you mentioned earlier positional need, things have changed in Vancouver. If you're looking at potentially spending $9 million or upwards of $9 million on a player on the wing, there is a real need down the middle of the ice for this team now, where Filip Hedl is a good 2C at this point in time. Can he be a 3C long-term? Probably a better fit. That's what you need. So that's why I think with Brock Besser, if it sounds like, you know, it seems like he's a bit of a surplus right now. And that's shocking to say because he's a 40-goal guy. He's your, you know, one of your top players in this regard. But you need that centerman first before you start loading up the wings.
Time for one final question here from Fish Dancer. And, you know, we're trying to project what this team looks like next year in terms of Besser and Demko and their futures and Pettersson and all of these things we've talked about on the show this week. Fish Dancer says, considering I've got about 40 years left, what do you think the odds are that the Canucks will win a cup before I croak? And ultimately, I have no idea because there's so many variables here. You know, again, projecting next year, there are variables. You know, how much expansion do we see in the league? Do we see the playoff format change at some point? You know, what happens with this organization, both in the short term in terms of their competitive window and in the longer term in terms of their drafting and development and the way that guys like Lekkomäki and Elias Pettersson, you know, how do they pan out? So ultimately, my answer is I don't know. But 40 years, if you're projecting 40 years, Fish Dancer, I'm going to say that's an awfully long time. It would really surprise me if the Canucks don't get it done in the next 4 decades. So I'm going to say yes, the Canucks will win the Cup at some point in the next 40 years.
Well, I certainly hope so, because I will be, 78 by then? And I'd like to see a Vancouver Cup win at some point in time as well in my lifetime. But, Batch, I go back to last year. I was guest hosting or guesting on a show with Jamie and Bick at Nat Bailey Stadium before a Canadiens game. And this, I want to say 10, 11-year-old came up to me and asked, when are the Canucks going to win the Stanley Cup? And I boldly said, hey, kid, before you finish university or wherever you go to school, wherever you go your post-secondary education, by the time you're done there, I believe they'll win. So I'm going to stick with that. I'm going to go less than 40 years. I'm assuming maybe, let's say, 10 to 12 to 10 to 15 for the sake of that kid and keeping him optimistic.
Yeah, there you go. So thanks, as always, for all your questions this week, as we're just about done here on In the Booth. The Canucks will be back in action Saturday night against the Vegas Golden Knights. 7 o'clock puck drop. I'll have the call right here on Sportsnet 650 alongside former NHLer Landon Ferraro. And Randeep, you'll be on Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi. So what do you guys have coming up on your show?
Well, we've got the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Carolina Hurricanes. Mikko Rantanen back in trade discussions. And we got Vancouver Vegas as well. So we'll have that broadcast on the television side of things.
And that does it for In the Booth this week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.